Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien and joining me today once again is Semantic Threat Researcher Bridget O'Gorman. In this week's podcast, we'll be discussing the latest on some law enforcement actions against cyber criminals, and we'll also have some updates on some of the newer ransomware strains on the block, namely Diavol and Noberis.
Yeah, but first, Dick, I suppose let's turn to what's been the big story of the past week, not just, I guess, in cybersecurity, but just in general, which is cyber attacks against Ukraine.
Yeah, this is one of those rare occasions, all right, where the main cybersecurity story is also the main general news story. We probably don't have to give that much background because anyone who's been even keeping the most casual eye on the news should know the context. But just to summarize, there's currently an unprecedented level of tension at the moment between Russia and Ukraine that has been created by a massive Russian military buildup on the Ukrainian border. Various demands are being made, threats are being made in return, and there is a widespread belief that there is a very real risk of war in this case. So in that context, there have been a number of cyber attacks directed against Ukraine. And there's also been a lot of speculation on what could happen in the cyber arena should things escalate further.
Okay, so I guess maybe fill us in on what's happened to date then first.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few things. But I guess before I delve into that, I probably should note that we can say with a fairly high degree of confidence that there is a long-running and ongoing Russian-sponsored espionage campaign directed at Ukraine. So what we're going to talk about now are incidents that are over and above that sort of normal level of activity and appear to be directly linked to or prompted by the current events. So the first incident of note was on January 14th, and that was where a number of Ukraine government websites were attacked and defaced. Now, initial media reports kind of made this out that this was a quote, massive cyber attack. And that's a bit of an overstatement. I don't want to downplay its seriousness, but it was actually quite targeted. So it was approximately 15 websites that were targeted. All of them were running the same content management system, and it looks like that an exploit affecting this said CMS was used as the route into these websites and allowed the attackers in order to deface them. So the attack itself was a bit of a kind of, I guess, a propaganda effort or kind of a, you know, a way of sending some menacing messages. For example, the message on one website said, Ukrainians, all your information about you has become public. Be afraid and expect the worst. It's your past, present and future. I think it was the foreign ministry that message appeared on.
So a bit of dramatics there, I suppose. But mm-hmm. I gathered then that things got a bit more serious, I suppose, after that.
Yeah, they did. So the next incident to occur, it actually began around the same time as those website defacements, but I think news of it only kind of emerged a few days later. And what occurred was the deployment of some destructive malware. It was a disk wiper that was used against a range of organizations in the Ukraine, including, again, a number of government organizations. So the malware it's being called Whispergate, and it actually masqueraded as ransomware since it left a ransom note on the computer after it did its work. However, this ransom note was just a decoy because there was absolutely no way an affected user could restore their files. So it was a wiper, and it was a two-stage threat. So there was, I guess, two pieces of malware involved. The first stage, it overwrote the master boot record, and then a downloader downloaded the second stage payload from a Discord channel, and this second stage payload was set to overwrite and rename all files bearing any of a pre-configured list of extensions. So a kind of a belt and braces approach to wiping, as they say here in Ireland. They were leaving nothing to chance. They were trying to kind of exact maximum destruction on an affected machine.
Yeah, and I mean, do we know who was behind this wiping attack then?
No, not exactly. There is obviously a widespread assumption that the attack was directed by Russia. However, beyond that, not much is really known. We ourselves did see some clues into its origins when we were investigating some samples of this wiper malware being shared by some of our peers in the industry. What our investigation found was that there were examples of the wiper being created as early as October of last year. Whether they were deployed at that date, we don't know. But the fact that it existed back then means they could have been. But it's certainly evidence that it was being worked on as far back as October. So there was a lot of preparation gone into this. Then possibly more interestingly, we also found three samples of ransomware, all from different families, so three completely different types of ransomware, all with the same debug path as this example of the wiper. And the debug path appears to be unique. In other words, it doesn't seem to be a default directory or anything like that. So what does that mean? Well, it suggests, it's not hard and fast evidence, but it certainly suggests that all four pieces of malware, the wiper and these three different types of ransomware, were created on the same computer. So what does that tell us? Well, I guess it gives us a number of hypotheses as to how this wiper was developed. One is that maybe the creation of Whispergate was outsourced to a ransomware developer. They're obviously specialists in destructive types of malware. And maybe one of them was contracted to do it. The other hypothesis is that the attackers themselves, in order to create an effective wiper that masqueraded as ransomware, they were studying ransomware themselves before writing Whispergate. And then the third hypothesis is this debug path is just a pure coincidence.
Yeah, you mentioned NotPetya there, and even when you were talking about it, that's kind of where my mind went as well, because there is a lot of similarities between this attack and the NotPetya attack, isn't there, really?
Yeah, they are very, very similar, all right. So to refresh people's memories, NotPetya, also known as Petya, but it was called NotPetya because it was based on a ransomware strain called Petya, but it wasn't really Petya. So NotPetya was a highly destructive wiper that was directed at Ukraine in 2017, but it managed to spread way beyond Ukrainian borders, and it affected a lot of organizations much further afield. And I think it was the same year as WannaCry, but I think next to WannaCry, it was probably the most disruptive cyber attack of that year. Both NotPetya and Whispergate are wipers that pretended to be ransomware, and both, of course, were directed against Ukraine. And I guess the main difference really was impact. NotPetya included a self-propagation method, which meant that it spread very, very quickly, and its spread was, out of the attacker's control, really, once they let it loose. So it went way beyond its original targets, and it went all over the place, essentially. It spread from computers in Ukraine to other organizations who were doing business in Ukraine, and, it caused an awful lot of problems. Whispergate doesn't have this self-propagation mechanism, so in this case, it's a much more targeted wiper attack.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess then the next question is, if things continue to, deteriorate, I suppose, how bad could this situation get?
Yeah, I guess even not trying to be alarmist, they definitely can get significantly worse. And I say that because there is some precedent there. During 2016, there was a number of attacks against the power grid in Ukraine. This all occurred in the depths of winter, I might add, in the middle of December, when you know it's a very cold over there. And the attacks were so disruptive, they actually caused power outages across the country. So you would imagine that if they wanted to escalate things, something similar could be attempted. So those attacks in 2016 against the power grid and indeed NotPetya, which we just talked about, have both been attributed to a Russian actor that is known as Sandworm. And Sandworm, according to US government indictments and other sources, has been behind a lot of, I guess, high-level ambitious attacks against various countries in recent years. So I think it's probably fair to say that these people are the big guns, and the main risk on the cyber front is that they could be called in at some stage if they really wanted to make things worse.
Yeah, and I guess then maybe before we move on from this, you did mention when you first started talking that there's been a long-running and ongoing Russian-sponsored espionage campaign directed against Ukraine. So maybe do you want to fill in listeners a bit more on that generally?
Yeah, sure. So while it's fair to say that various Russian-backed threat actors have targeted Ukraine in recent years, what I was referring to mainly is that there is one group whose sole purpose appears to be attacking Ukraine. We call that group Shookworm. Other vendors refer to it as Gamereddon. Indeed, the Ukraine government itself refers to it as Gamereddon or Armageddon. So for anyone who's interested in this and wants to get up to speed on them, the Security Service of Ukraine, that's SSU for short, put out a report on Shookworm in early November, and they provided lots and lots of detail on what this group has been up to of late. And the report kind of, you know, pretty much serves as a good primer on the group. So Shookworm has been targeting Ukraine since at least 2014. And in that time, its attacks have been growing in sophistication. The Ukraine government believes, and I stress that this is their assessment, that they are an integral part of the Russian security agency FSB, and that this unit is based in the Crimean city of Sevastopol. And of course, Crimea, as we know, was Ukrainian territory until it was seized by Russia a few years ago. Interestingly enough, up until quite recently, Shookworm wasn't in any way the most sophisticated APT group around. But they tended to make up for this with persistence and a very tight focus on just Ukraine. So their modus operandi essentially was mass targeting of computers in order to infect them individually with malware. So things like penetrating the network and moving laterally that you'd see from most APT groups, they weren't doing that. They were just out to infect as many computers as possible. However, it seems that over the past year, Shookworm has seriously improved its capabilities, and they're now employing TTPs that are more in line with what we'd see from today's APT groups. So they're using living off the land tools to steal credentials and move laterally, employing a selection of payloads that include either custom malware or indeed legit remote administration tools. So that report, it makes for very interesting reading. And what it describes is very much in line with what we've been seeing from Shookworm recently. So they're probably still not right at the pointy end of Russia's cyber capabilities. But in the event of any conflict, I think their activities would definitely contribute into it, not just in terms of like any intelligence gleaned, but also potentially on maybe the access that they could provide to more elite units.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you'd imagine they had learned a lot by having such a tight focus on Ukraine over the last, you know, several years, I guess, that other groups could potentially exploit.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's something we have been and will be watching closely, but hopefully things don't escalate further. So we'll move on from Ukraine for the moment, at least anyway, and we'll talk about some of the other things that have been going on in the world. I think the first thing you wanted to talk about, Bridget, was the trend of law enforcement taking action against cyber criminals. This has continued over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I think we kind of were discussing this in one of our other podcasts maybe towards the end of last year, that seems to be a bit more kind of, I suppose, law enforcement activity targeted at cyber criminals recently. And some news emerged last week that Russia's FSB, Federal Security Service, had actually arrested the administrator of the UniCC carding forum, along with three other suspects as well. And so Andrei Sergeyevich Novak was detained on charges of computer crimes and money laundering, while three additional suspects were also detained and they've been placed under house arrest. And Novak, who used the online handles Faxtrod, Fax and Unic, is also suspected of being part of the InFraud, financial fraud, cybercrime gang. And he's actually been wanted by the FBI since 2018. However, as Russia does not generally extradite criminals to other countries, it's likely any charges he faces will only be in Russia. And this news came actually after UniCC announced on the 12th of January that it will be closing down due to its administrator's pending retirement, which we have to assume was Novak's pending retirement. And the forum is estimated to have generated at least $358 million in cryptocurrency from the sales of stolen payment cards since it was first launched in 2013, which is obviously a long time in the cyber criminal world to be on the go. So maybe Novak should have cut his losses a bit sooner because it doesn't look like he'll be getting to spend any more of his ill-gotten gains at the moment anyway. But this move from the FSB, it's kind of particularly noticeable, I guess, as news about it emerged just a week after Russian law enforcement arrested members of the Revel ransomware gang in, you know, what was the most unusual move. And the FSB said then that they had made those arrests after they received information about gang members from US law enforcement. So Russia, you know, was generally known for turning a bit of a blind eye to the cyber criminals, you know, which is are believed to be many that operate within its borders, unless they hit targets in Russia specifically. You know, which is why we see a lot of ransomware excludes, you know, machines that have Russian language on them from their targets and things like that. You know, so these recent moves by the FSB to arrest cyber criminals within the country's borders, they're certainly interesting. And I mean, if they continue, they do have the potential to cause disruption. So we'll have to wait and see, I guess, what happens there as things go on. And interestingly as well, US authorities said that during those arrests of the Revel gang members, the person responsible for the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack was also arrested. And even though that attack that occurred in May last year was attributed to the Darkside or Cori ransomware gang and not to Revel. However, those responsible for Darkside are believed to have been very close associates and possibly former affiliates of Revel. But I think the notion, you know, that one individual was responsible for that ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline is, you know, is pretty unlikely. It was undoubtedly a group effort. So, you know, I think the whole we got him, you know, type thing is probably not exactly accurate, I would say.
Yeah, that news is certainly fascinating. You kind of suspect there's some aspect of the story that we don't know because it's unusual for those kind of arrests to be made. I think particularly because it's fair to say that relations between Russia and the US are not exactly friendly at the moment.
Certainly.
So there, you know, there must be something going on that we haven't heard about. But anyway, Europol, they've also made a move to disrupt some serious cyber criminal activity recently as well, haven't they?
Yeah, Europol seized the service of VPNLab.net, which was a virtual private network provider that was primarily advertised in underground forums and used by various cyber criminal gangs, including some ransomware operators. And this incident, it was quite a large international law enforcement operation, and it resulted in the seizure of 15 servers that were operated by the VPN lab in several countries, including Germany, the Netherlands, Canada, the Czech Republic, France, Hungary, Latvia, Ukraine, again, the US and the UK as well. So VPN Lab has been around since around 2008, and it used basically OpenVPN technology. It used 2048-bit encryption as then a network of services basically to encrypt and anonymize connections for its clients. And it charged as little as $60 per year for some of its services. So it was very popular among cyber criminals, you know, both, I suppose, larger groups and also smaller operators, given those kind of prices. And the service was found by investigators to have been used in many cybercrime incidents, including in the setting up of infrastructure and communications behind ransomware campaigns, as well as the actual deployment of ransomware as well. So Europol didn't announce any arrests as part of this takedown, but VPS Lab services have been stopped, and its website does now show a Europol seizure banner. And the law enforcement agency said as well that data found on the seized servers allowed it to notify more than 100 businesses of impending cyber attacks. So it just seemed to have been a pretty impactful takedown, even if no arrests were announced.
Okay. Let's go on to ransomware, because Noberis is a ransomware family we've been talking about on this podcast before. And I think the first publicly reported victim of Noberis came to light in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's unusual for it to take us this long to get to ransomware, actually, on the podcast. Normally, it's our primary topic of conversation recently. We blogged about Noberis in December, just gone, and actually spoke about that blog in the last podcast we did before the kind of December holiday break. And we said at the time that Noberis was interesting, as it was coded in Rust, and that was the first time we'd seen a professional ransomware strain that was used in real-world attacks coded in that programming language. And we had seen it on some victim machines in November 2021, which we wrote about in the blog. But last week, Italian luxury fashion brand Moncler confirmed that it had also been hit by the ransomware in the last week of December, just around Christmas time. At the time, the luxury fashion brand had announced an interruption in its IT services, but said it would just be a temporary outage. However, Moncler did confirm then on the 18th of January that was actually a ransomware attack that it had suffered at that time. And it was kind of, I suppose, forced to issue that announcement because Noberis leaked some of its information on its data leak site. And the fashion brand told Bleeping Computer, confirmed to Bleeping Computer, that some data related to employees, former employees, suppliers, consultants, business partners, and customers have been leaked by the ransomware group. So from screenshots that were shared on Noberis's data leak site, you know, the stolen data appeared to include earnings statements and spreadsheets of what looked to be customer information, invoices and various other documents. However, Moncler did say that no customer data relating to credit cards or other means of payment have been exfiltrated. The fashion brand also warns that any further possession or distribution of the stolen data will be considered a criminal offence, and it said it didn't pay any ransom, and that its stakeholders and the Italian Data Protection Authority had all been informed about this cyber attack. Noberis claimed to have made a demand of a ransom of $3 million to not publish this data. And the gang is also believed to be attempting to sell the data it was stolen from, you know, what's described as rich customers to other cyber criminals, which is something we're increasingly seeing ransomware criminals doing lately. If they steal data from victims, they seem to be trying to sell on that data rather than simply dumping it online if they don't receive the ransoms they're looking for.
Yeah, they're always looking for ways to maximize their profit margins.
Yes.
And another ransomware family, I believe the FBI has officially linked the recently emerged Diavol ransomware to the creators of Ryuk and Conti.
Yeah, so the FBI formally linked Diavol ransomware to the miner, what we track as the miner, also known as Wizard Spider cybercrime group, and an advisory it issued about the ransomware last week. So Miner, as you said, is responsible for the Ryuk and Conti ransomware families, but not just them. It also controls the TrickBot botnet. So it's obviously a very powerful kind of cyber threat actor at the moment. And this attribution by the FBI isn't particularly surprising, as FortiGuard Lab researchers had first tentatively linked Diavol to Miner back in July last year, when they saw this new ransomware deployed, what was new at the time, ransomware deployed in an attack in which Conti was also deployed. So the FBI said it had seen Dybal demanding ransoms of between $10,000 and $500,000. In its advisory, and they also included some indicators of compromise linked to the ransomware there. And the ransom amounts quoted are quite interesting, as they're kind of relatively low ransoms, really, for what we see on the scene at the moment. And when we consider the ransoms we see demanded by the likes of Conti, you know, they often go into the tens of millions of dollars. And Dybal is reported as well to be willing to negotiate on the ransom demanded. So it seems like maybe they're using Dybal to go after sort of, you know, I suppose lower victims aren't as rich perhaps as those they target with the Conti ransomware. And the FBI also said that it hasn't yet seen any evidence Dybal leaking data that's been stolen from victims, despite the fact that it does threaten to do so in its ransom notes. And obviously that is a typical kind of activity we see now from ransomware gangs, as Nobear has just demonstrated in the last story. Generally, ransomware gangs do leak data if ransoms aren't paid. So the FBI was likely able to establish this link between Dybal and Miner following the arrest of Ala Witt, who was a Latvian woman allegedly involved in the deployment of ransomware for the malware gang. And this is what kind of from analysis by Vitaly Kremes, who's the CEO of AvIntel. When he was speaking to Bleeping Computer, he said that he believed that Witt had played a critical role in TrickBot's operations and actually was responsible for the development of the Dybal ransomware. And Witt was charged at multiple counts by the US Department of Justice in June 2021 for her role as an alleged malware developer with Miner. So it appears maybe that that arrest was able to give the FBI this kind of extra information that allowed them to make this kind of formal link.
Yeah, it's interesting how they're, I guess law enforcement are building up a much more kind of accurate picture of what of these cybercrime groups with their various arrests and indictments, you know, and it's always makes for interesting reading.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, let's wrap it up there. If you've been enjoying our podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing out on all of our future episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Threat Intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, you can check out our blog, which can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time, but until then, thank you and goodbye.